If your restaurant wants to put the best on the table, look for food with a New York State certified seal. It's food that is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and welcome to 2017. It's the start of a new year here at Heritage and everywhere in the world. So thanks for joining us again. And I'm really excited to kick off this year with a really great guest. Her name is Trina Hahnemann. She is one of the greatest Scandinavian food experts, writers, chefs, at least in my opinion. She is one of the best food writers out there. And I'm really excited to have her on the show to talk about her latest book, Scandinavian Comfort Food. Hi, Trina. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, congrats on your latest book. It's your third book, right? Or you had Scandinavian cooking, which is one of my favorites. And then there was a Nordic diet. This one is called Scandinavian Comfort Food. And the subtitle is Embracing the Art of Hygge. Am I pronouncing that right, first of all? I'm really trying.
Almost. You're almost there.
Okay. Hygge. 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 Oh, okay. One more syllable.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, so this is really a term that is kind of elusive here in the States. We don't have an exact translation of it. So,
nope.
But it has actually been a little bit buzzy lately. I've been seeing it come up in articles here and there, especially now that it's the winter time. So, as I understand it, hygge is a sense, if you can be really concise, it's a sort of sense of coziness, but it's a bit more than that, right?
First of all, the word is embedded in our culture in a different way. We use the word all the time. We just don't. Hygge is the thing, but we use the word for a lot of things that we do. So we describe a lot of things during the day or every day as being hygge or not being hygge. So in a way, it's a way of really defining our culture. And we are a nation of people, especially in Denmark, which is where it is used the most in that sense, who loves to hang out at home and have it hygge, which, of course, also incorporates a lot of food and drinks, both hot and cold, and alcohol. So it's more than an idea, and I think it's a bit more than coziness, but all cultures kind of have it. We just have it a lot, if you know what I mean. The way Danes really like, if you can create moments of hygge every day.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's not only a Sunday thing. Let's, postpone the whole thing until Sunday. So to kind of nail it down, it's about creating these little breaks and moments during the day where you kind of feel present, where you sit down and have that cup of coffee with a good friend or with a bunch of old friends or family, or just by yourself with the newspaper, and you make sure to lit the candles and make the atmosphere just a little bit more special.
Mm-hmm. And I lament how un-New York hygge seems to be. But I'm trying here.
Thinking about sitting around a table with everybody has their iPhone in their hand, looking at it while they're talking and having a drink, that is not hygge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the opposite of that. It has to be a certain present right there.
And I love that there's a word in Danish that is like anti-hygge, right? You can describe something as un-hygge. What is that word?
Anti-hygge. We have something called uhyggeligt.
Uh-huh.
Which is just the U in front, but uhyggeligt is not the anti-word. It's really scary.
Oh, scary, I see.
Scary.
Okay.
So, it's scary.
Creepy.
So you would say, if you see like a thriller, it's uhyggeligt.
Mm.
So it's a bit, it's not really, the opposite, but it could be what then we're more over like in the scary department. So.
Mm. nervous, antsy. Okay.
Yeah, so the antsy is always not too good. But there's a lot of, if you know, like, it has lots to do with the home culture. Mm-hmm. And you can, and I think when we talk about the Scandinavian and, you know, Noma being this famous restaurant in Copenhagen, I think actually one of the things that René Redzepi really did was he made going out to a Michelin star kind of restaurant hyggeligt. Mm-hmm. And that has not been seen. That's one of the really big things he did. He took off the tablecloth, he put, you know, skins and candles and dark, you know, lightning and very convivial kind of service where everybody would come and talk to you like you were an old friend and it wasn't stiff at all. Mm-hmm. That is hyggeligt. Because a lot of times Danes would never, you know, they wouldn't say going to a fancy restaurant was hyggeligt. It's more formal and that's not hyggeligt. Hyggeligt is very intimate.
Yeah, I love that hyggeligt is, am I getting this right? Hygge is the noun and then hyggeligt is the adjective?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, okay, I love that, you know, this is something new that we're seeing in restaurants where it's not always the case. Perhaps that has to do something with the fact that, you know, Scandinavian food has really risen to the highest echelons of fine dining in the last few decades. And at least when I was growing up, I didn't know much about the food of Scandinavia beyond the Swedish Chef, which was Jim Henson's character, which was kind of a joke. And then I knew there was herring and maybe some potatoes. But and now, you know, everyone knows this great cuisine of Scandinavia, which is wonderful. And your books are a great entry into that and how you can enjoy it at home, no matter where you are. And you don't have to be in a high-end restaurant to do that.
No.
This book is such a personal book, and it's a lot more opinionated than your last, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I love that you talk about, you know, why it's important to buy organic. And I thought it was really interesting that you noted that when you eat and cook yourself, you're helping to further biodiversity, because when you're cooking, you have to be buying from a range of ingredients that you choose by the seasons, perhaps, instead of these processed foods, which are just going to be made around the year, the same exact way, and just furthering this system of commodity crops that is, you know, it's not really helping biodiversity at all. So I thought that was a really great point.
Thank you. Yeah, I think actually biodiversity should be on the plate and not in seed banks. You know, mm-hmm. you know, year round, we should make sure to eat as many different vegetables as possible wherever we live, and of course as local as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's and actually we've been doing that in the Nordic countries for, you know, centuries. It's just only after the Second World War and we started having this huge, you know, things to choose from, and there wasn't that great. Actually, the cabbage and the root vegetables and the potatoes we grow taste a lot better here in the winter than all these weird things that gets, you know, exported
imported,
from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, having choice, I love that you write that, you know, having choice is great, but it's almost better to have a more limited choice because it's easier to kind of enjoy cooking with. I mean, I get overwhelmed too if I go to, let's say, a huge grocery store and just too many options. It's like, just show me a few things that are good right now and I'll be much better off for it. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, Denmark is recognized in a lot of Scandinavian countries too for their incredible progress in food waste reduction. So there's recently some efforts that have led to a 25% reduction in food waste compared to 5 years ago in Denmark. And that's like, you know, something that U.S. has been grappling with, you know, how are we going to do this? How do you think, first of all, you know, does this tie into a sort of cultural sense throughout the country? And also, how did you achieve that even with knowing, or does it go hand in hand?
Yeah, I think, first of all, there's been such an emphasis on how we cook and how we eat over the last 20 years, of course, and there's been these, you know, political movements to force, you know, governments and, you know, regions to turn organic. So that's kind of been the first step of this whole way of understanding the food chain. And then, of course, food waste. There's been some really, really good campaigns about it and a lot of talk about it, because one thing, Danes hate to waste money.
Yeah.
And it is always, when you go to Danish supermarkets, there will be so many offers, you know, and we have this catalog that comes in, like you have the coupons, we have a catalog that comes in, you know, to see what's on offer and on sale in the supermarket this week. So if you can convince a Dane that he can, you know, save some money, that's the best way to talk to them. So there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how do you, why would you, you know, food is money. Why would you want to throw it out? You know, why don't we go back to understanding the way we lived, you know, when we couldn't afford to throw the food out? That's the problem. You know, 50 years ago, nobody was throwing food out because they couldn't afford it. And so that was one, you know, a lot of, you could say, campaigning and but also some really interesting organizations. There was organizations where they sell the food that's been sell-by date in the supermarket. There's one really big organization that collect a lot of food and give it to people who are less fortunate, so like homeless and people who are on welfare. So they can come and pick up a box every week of food, which is fine, but can't be sold in the supermarket anymore. And I think I mean, and tons of food is gonna is actually you know, moved through the system now, and also all of a sudden the supermarkets, they kind of saw that there was an opportunity here to sell things that was more, that they didn't have to be so rigid about it, and they have put in an initiatives where they are longer sell-by dates, where the food is still fine, because a lot of it, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about why are they selling, why can the milk only, you know, last for 6 days when it can actually last for 10 days if it's put, if it's in the right temperature, and so on and so on. So you can say it's a lot of, it's awareness, it's campaigning, and it's, you have to kind of really come up with the argument, not always about the climate and all the really valuable and political things, but money. You can actually save a lot of money if you look into this, your own money. And I know that works.
That's a good approach. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's incredible how much can be done with a concerted, I guess, movement or and money too, with, you know, a campaign
also
around that.
Sometimes when things are really successful in Scandinavia, you have to remember we are very small countries. There's 5.5 million people in Denmark. There's 4 million in Norway and 8-9 million in Sweden, you know. We are nations where it's very easy and much quicker to, like, talk to everybody at once, you know. And so, therefore, we are also good prototypes, you know, you could say, for trying out how can things, you know, work in a nice way.
I think it's a great lesson, though, and I think that, you know, it's great to see the success happening. It's not impossible, though. You know, state by state, perhaps, at a time. But
I mean, nothing is impossible. I mean, if you can think it, you can do it, and then it can happen. I mean, that's kind of my, when it comes to the whole food chain and the problems we have, we could change them tomorrow if we wanted to. It's just, and actually, if you talk to the consumers, they have a lot of power, and they should use it more, because supermarkets will listen, because supermarkets are depending on you. They want you to come into their shop and do use your money. So if everybody's thinking about food waste, supermarkets are going to start doing something about it.
Absolutely.
If that is going to be the demand.
We gotta get some. We gotta get louder then. I love that you say you totally reject the notion that the world can't be fed on organic, and you know, you totally believe that we will have 100% organic or you know, slow grown foods someday if we just keep, if the trends continue. As you mentioned, Denmark is increasing that supply due to demand. And how much of Denmark's food would you say is organic at this point? It's such a small fraction.
I think I think it's 8%, but I'm not totally sure. But it's up there. It's really growing fast. I mean, milk is really big, and vegetables, of course. A lot of the basic vegetables are bread. Is becoming really a big commodity in organic produce as well, but it's really, really growing. And there's a real, there's not enough organic food, actually. So there's a campaign, more or less, to get more farmers to become organic. Mm-hmm. And I think it. I mean, I'm in no doubt. I just don't think it makes sense that, of course, we can. You know, there's a natural system on this planet. And if we follow it with all the knowledge we have today and use technology, not talking about going back to agriculture with a horse
right.
and a,
with a horse,
you know, you know, it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use whatever we know today. But I mean, UN has come up with reports that shows that we can feed a planet of so many people organically if we do it right and we don't waste food and we, you know, have a different supply chain and also a more fair way of dividing the food. And then, of course, also when you talk about that, you also have to talk about calories. A lot of people get too many calories and a lot of people get too few calories. And we also have to change that. There's no reason to eat, you know, more than you actually need.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a big shift and it's a huge turnover. But you have to believe it. If I give up believing it,
mm-hmm.
It's like giving in to
mm-hmm.
the. But I, you know, I just really believe I don't want food with any chemicals on it. I don't understand it. Why would I want that? You know,
and it's going to come back to bite us in other ways too. I mean, it's not like it's just going to disappear. The chemicals, they're in the ground. They're in the people now, and then you're going to have to pay.
Oh yeah, but you know, we have the Baltic Sea right out here, not far from Copenhagen, where I live. And when I was a little girl, there used to be a Baltic salmon. It was most lovely, lovely fish, and I really, you know, enjoyed it. There's no Baltic salmon left, and that's all
Aww.
Because most of the Baltic Sea is dead because of that, you know, of the residues from the agriculture. So,
Aww.
I mean, there's so much, also a lot of the illnesses we have, and there's so much we don't know, but there's
right.
also a lot that we know that
allergies.
I think should.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, say again.
Oh, like allergies or something and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, allergies, mm-hmm. but also what about. What about all these sicknesses we get? Dementia,
mm-hmm.
cancer. There's a lot of things that I think, you know, yeah. But also the other really big thing and more positive thing is why shouldn't there be lots of people working in agriculture? If we did it right, it could be a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, nature and farming is actually it can be. It's hard work, of course, but it's also beautiful.
Well, maybe because they have to deal with chemicals right in their faces. That's why.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's as it is now. Oh, gosh, Katrina, so many things to talk about, but we're going to come back to you in just a quick little commercial break.
New York chefs and restaurants are proud of the food they put on the table. And serving produce that comes from local, environmentally responsible farms is a way to leave an even better taste in everyone's mouth. So when shopping for your ingredients, look for the New York State Grown and Certified Seal. It lets you know which food is grown right here in New York State, certifying the food that comes from local farms that meet a higher standard. You'll not only be serving local food, you'll be supporting local farmers. Learn more about the New York State Grown and Certified Program at certified.ny.gov.
Hey, hey, we're back chatting more with Trina Hahnemann. She is the author of the new cookbook, Scandinavian Comfort Food. And Trina, I guess I failed to mention you are the author of 10 cookbooks in your native Danish, but only 4 of them are translated to English, which is why I thought there's only 4. But
I've written a lot of cookbooks. Actually, they're not translated. I wrote them myself in English. I've written 5 cookbooks in English and mm-hmm. 11 in Danish.
Wow, that's quite a achievement. So.
Thank you.
This one is,
yeah.
No, I'm such a fan of, your cookbook, Scandinavian Cooking, or is it the Food of Scandinavia? It's,
the first one that I
shipped that one to the photographer of the Food of Taiwan because I wanted him to do, I was like, do for Taiwan what Trina has done for you know the landscapes to capture that. It is such a beautiful atmospheric book. So I
thank you.
Yeah, but I want it back though because I gave it to my photographer. Anyway, but this book is really, really wonderful. I love how you divide it into occasions for cooking, from the simple little meals that you enjoy throughout the day, any time of the day, and also for festive occasions like Easter or get-togethers and desserts a little bit too. So tell me, why did you decide to organize the book like this? And it's quite unconventional, but it runs a whole gamut of recipes when you do it that way. Like salads.
As you said in the beginning, this is a really personal cookbook. Mm-hmm. This is not only a cookbook about my culture, it's also a cookbook about how I live and how I cook and how I actually live in my kitchen, which I feel I do. So I was thinking about it, and actually very few people, today kind of have that. We don't have, like, only we cook these meals in the weekends and this is breakfast. And it's much more open nowadays, you know, and it comes with, you know, people's weird diets and, you know, all the ways of interpreting what you would like to eat. And you have kind of the whole world of eating on your doorstep now because you're so inspired from the whole world. So I just really wanted the book to reflect how it goes on in my kitchen. And the first chapter I was thinking about what I eat during the day is because I don't really eat breakfast anymore. I stopped doing it after my children are not here anymore and I don't have to cook them breakfast because I'm not hungry.
In the morning.
Probably because I eat so much
at night.
You know, during the day and even at night.
Yeah.
So I don't get hungry right away. So on some days, you know, it will be late before I feel like eating. And that's the only kind of rule I have is, don't eat if you're not hungry. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless there's an occasion and somebody puts something wonderful in front of you. But, you know, don't keep to the meals necessary. We've been told for years, you know, I have to eat 3 or 6 meals a day and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really believe that because if you're not hungry, there's a reason. You know, your body probably don't need energy then. And then therefore. And that gave me the inspiration to kind of thinking, but how is it in my kitchen? How could I define it? And so I did it through the chapters.
And your chapters and all the dishes are beautiful, colorful, and vibrant. And there's, you know, salads galore. I can see this really tying in with a lot of food trends, but you also reject, or you say that you're not a fan of many food trends and diets as they come along.
No.
But it just so happens, you know, when you eat within the seasons and you eat mindfully and you try a number of ingredients, that it, you know, it turns out to be extremely healthful. One thing I noticed is that there's a lot of one pot meals throughout here. And that's really helpful for a home cook. I'm looking at one right now that is really interesting. I've never heard of it before. It is, you call it my favorite winter stew from childhood, labskovs.
Labskovs.
It's a mash cooked with meat and flavoring served with chives and pickled beetroot. So it looks beautiful. So it's potato mash with some beef, chuck steak, all strewn throughout. Why didn't I think of that? That's just so cozy.
Yeah, I mean, it's really traditional Danish. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so lovely in the winter. I mean, it's like it really warms you up. I mean, right now it's really cold here, so you need that.
Yeah.
And so, apart from it, you know, what I love about it is it kind of, you know, as soon as it's in the pot, it takes care of itself, and then you can read the newspaper and have a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
But
why not?
It's also really tasty.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it also is, you know, food is very emotional also. Mm-hmm. So this dish carries a lot of memories, and, you know, my grandmother cooked it for me, my mother cooked it for me, and I've, you know, had it in lots of different occasions. So at the same time, you know, it's important. It's an important part of my food culture. And also one of the dishes that I hope will not disappear in this whole modern kind of, you know, young people cook, you know, or they all cook Mexican or Thai or whatever they do here. So, you know, kind of showing them these are some of the really good dishes we have, and I think we can share with the world.
Yeah, and keeping it real, but also it looks just so fascinating. I've never seen it in any, you know, trendy sort of articles and so forth. So that's cool. I love that you have a good fish soup, a recipe for that. Fish soup, my classic way, you call it. And you note that this recipe recalls a time that no longer exists. If I can just continue, I'll just read your quote. You write, in Scandinavia, famous artists would go to seaside hotels for fresh air and a change of scenery and society. The bourgeois nouveau riche needed a break from city life. In those times when we lived more according to Proust, a fish soup would like this would be served. Okay. So that doesn't happen anymore, huh? That's a really interesting head note, too, for a recipe. It looks like a delicious recipe, but that's also really interesting slice of history and culture for Scandinavia. So where do the bourgeois and nouveau riche go now, if not the seaside?
I just think that I kind of miss a little bit old Europe. I mean, you know, if I can say that, it's like we have like so much going on, you know, with politically and, you know, things in the world that's not, I don't think it's very sophisticated, you know. So, you know, people, there used to be wealthy people who are very well read and, you know, they had manners and they did these things where there was like a certain standard. So they would go and then there was this lovely, lovely hotel in called Brøndums Hotel. It's still there. It's in the, you can't go any more south in Denmark than there. It's called Skagen, and it's a beautiful, beautiful area. We have little yellow fishing houses, and there used to be 130 years ago, there was a community of artists and writers, and you know, painters and writers and composers who would meet up there and live there all through the summer. So and the light up there is amazing. So if you're a painter, there's some really famous painters who comes from there, that from Denmark. So and they would go to this place, and fish soup would be one of the, you know, things that you would eat, whatever, you know, fish was in season at that time. So and I kind of, I don't know, sometimes I just long for you know, something a bit more, I don't know, civilized.
They people are no fun these days, huh? yeah, that just sounds so lovely. And also, this fish soup looks quite elaborate and beautiful, but still very simple. You know, it's fish. It's four other ingredients. You know, maybe some leeks and some other tasty stuff. So I just love hearing you know, your takes on the culture throughout here, along with your attitudes on. And the Christmas dinner, I have to ask you how it was this year, because we just had Christmas, and I'm reading this whole chapter about Christmas dinner at your house, and it looks absolutely just so lovely and so fun, too. So how was your Christmas dinner this year?
It was really good. Actually, my children, my children are grown ups. They are, you know, but they said that they probably thought that the gravy was the best this year.
The gravy.
But I think they say it every, they say it every year. It's like, oh, no, now, Mom, it's better than ever. It's like, whoa. No, it was really delicious. I mean, I love this meal. It is so good. But it, I think part of it is also that you eat it once a year. And I don't touch it in, you know, any other day. And so it's the whole basic is the duck, and of course the caramel potatoes and the cabbage, and the, you know, the different vegetable dishes, and then the gravy. Has to be gravy. and I enjoy cooking it. It's like a ritual, you know. I start the 22nd, and then I spend a lot of, you know, time in my kitchen, starting with tea in the morning, and then of course after 4 o'clock it turns into drinks and red wine and. You know, it is Christmas, and I listen to a lot of radio. Actually, I listen to a lot of radio programs while I cook. I love that. So for me, it's like a ritual every year. You know, I go into my kitchen and I kind of think about what I, you know, what the year was like, and then I cook what I think is an amazing meal for my family and the people I love. So I couldn't actually ask for more. That is, for me, the perfect Christmas.
Oh, wonderful. And I love how you have a suggestion for having a recipe for friends over for Christmas lunch too. So that's just like another layer to the rituals. That is a really great idea. And not to mention, one of these recipes is called juniper cured salmon. And you said that's an all-time Scandic classic. It looks absolutely wonderful, but I've been using your recipe for citrus cured salmon from the Scandinavian cookbook for years because it is awesome. Yeah. It has taught me how to cure salmon, and I do it all the time now. So thank you.
But I'm going to admit to you, Kathy, that the one with the citrus is the best. That is my signature salmon recipe, and it is amazing. And I agree with you.
Good to know.
I love it too.
Thank you very much for that. Honesty. I'm going to stick with it, but I'm going to try also the juniper. Oh, did you have that on Christmas?
Yeah, we did. I did both because we had a Christmas party, and then I did the citrus one for the family. So we were eating that all through the Christmas day. My daughter loves that salmon with a horseradish cream and rye bread. That's just her favorite thing.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, I'm going to keep on carrying on your Christmas traditions as well as mine in my home. And I'm going to keep on trying to practice my hygge this winter for sure. But it looks like that's about all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us from all the way in Copenhagen. I can't wait to share this book with more people. So everyone check out Scandinavian Comfort Food by Trine Hanneman. It is definitely, it's a huge book. It's only $35. It is beautiful. It is, it's just chock full of recipes. So a great winter cookbook, and actually all year round. But thank you so much for sharing, Trine.
Thank you so much for having me on, and happy winter.
Thank you, too. And thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Heritage on Eat Your Words.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.